This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with activist Faye Williams, longtime Louisiana Politico, now based in Washington, D.C., and she will comment on the narrow win in the Republican U.S. Senate primary in Mississippi this week of the six-term incumbent Thad Cochran, who won because Mississippi law allowed Democrats, particularly black Democrats, to vote in the Republican primary. And as a result, Cochran won by just over a percentage point over challenger Chris McDaniel. Also on the show, Dan Clater, the state senator and congressional candidate on goings-on at the Capitol, including his failed effort this session to outlaw drones in Louisiana, and activist Mike Stagg on a march to the mansion to protest the stopping of the suit against the oil and gas industry. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local dial. Outside the area, please call 877-217-5757, and you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our guest to begin is Dr. E. Faye Williams, Pride of Alexandria, longtime Louisiana Politico based in Washington, D.C., where this week the biggest news was the victory in a Republican primary in the Magnolia State of Mississippi by six-term incumbent Republican Thad Cochran. The New York Times characterized the race this way: the prospect of electing an intemperate Tea Party candidate who was openly nostalgic for Confederate days was so repellent to many black voters in Mississippi that they did a remarkable thing on Tuesday, crossing party lines to help give the Republican Senate nomination to Thad Cochran in office for 36 years. The Times says now it's time for Mr. Cochran to return the favor by supporting a stronger Voting Rights Act and actively working to reduce his party extreme anti-government policies. Good morning, Faye Williams.
Hello, how are you?
Doing well. So are you going to work on Thad Cochran now?
Well, yes, actually, I'm going to go to see him before long and tell him that he owes black people big time for returning him. I mean, it's an unusual thing, but he certainly owes black people, because were it not for the strong black vote, he would not be back in office. But, you know, it's not unusual. Black people have so often, especially in these southern states, had to vote for the lesser of two evils. And I guess in this case, Thad Cochran was considered the lesser of two evils. But we should not let him forget how he got there. You know, similar things happened in Louisiana. I remember when John Brough ran. At the time, I can't even think of his name now.
Henson Moore yeah, was his.
You know, Billy, who he was a Democrat.
Billy Tozan, yes.
They didn't vote right most of the time, even though they were Democrats. And when I ran for office, I know that we turned out a very strong black vote, which helped John Brough beat Henson at that time. And we don't always get anything in return. I mean, you know, we don't go and vote for people asking special favors, but when they win on the black vote, you would think that they would vote for things that are of special concern to black people, you know, once they get there, like now, straightening up the Voting Rights Act. I mean, that's just so, I can't even begin to understand why someone would vote against the rights of people to vote.
Well, you've already hit a nerve with a listener who quickly emailed Troy, asking if you think John Brough made the right decision in voting to confirm Clarence Thomas.
Oh, absolutely not. absolutely not. It's things like that. They come along and vote against the interests of the very people who have gone out so strongly for them. If you remember, when I ran for Congress that year, John Brough got about half of his votes from the 8th Congressional District, which was my district, and I turned out so many people, or our campaign turned out so many people to vote for him, to help him to win. But I went to him shortly afterwards, because I had a campaign debt, and I asked him to put his name on an invitation to help me pay off the debt. He absolutely refused and said something about, well, you know, I'm a United States Senator now, and I don't lend my name lightly. Well, he accepted my name to help get the votes out. But he was of almost no use to us once he got to the Senate. People often kid me. Even these days, they tease me about having helped to elect people like John Brough.
Well, last year, Thad Cochran praised the Supreme Court decision that gutted the heart of the Voting Rights Act.
Yeah.
He is he's not a liberal by any stretch of the imagination. It is remarkable that these African Americans in Mississippi would vote for him under any circumstances based on his record.
And through the years, it wasn't like he just had a bad record one year. I mean, it's been through the years, but I can understand it when I think about, comparing, as I said, voting for the lesser of two evils. But, you know, in this case, I guess I don't personally see either one of them being the lesser of two evils, except that Mr. Cochran does have the power, the authority with another term to do some things that he might normally not have done, you know, to do the right thing. He has no reason not to do the right thing now because he doesn't have to worry about re-election again, according to what he said. So he should be able to be helpful to some of the things, especially like the Voting Rights Act to us, and we're going to be demanding that.
Well, this guy, Chris McDaniel, who opposed Thad Cochran, spoke to the Sons of Confederate Veterans, and he defended the group, saying it's a historical organization filled with reenactors and collectors. Now, some would say it's much more than that, but that's what Mr. McDaniel said, and he lost. Mm-hmm. But he also mm-hmm. says, at this point, he's challenging the election. It's close
yes.
enough, and he doesn't look like he's going to go away without a fight.
Yeah, well, you know, that statement is sort of like people who uphold the name of the Washington Redskins and claim that it's honoring the Native Americans. I mean, some people can come up with the stupidest, the silliest explanations for what they do, and they have to know that what they're saying is wrong.
Okay, 297-5633 for Faye Williams, 877-217-5757 outside the area. And Faye says, she, in her capacity as a leader in the African-American community, will go to Thad Cochran. I would imagine he will meet with you, and he's quite a gentleman, I understand. And
yes.
He'll probably listen, and he'll probably keep voting as he has. He is, after all, a conservative, but in the views of many thousands of African-Americans in Mississippi, he was more palatable than his opponent. And Cochran, by virtue of winning the Mississippi Republican primary, is almost certain to be reelected to the United States Senate. Now, here in yeah. Louisiana, Faye, twice David Duke, when he ran for governor and for U.S. Senator, received a majority of the white vote. So yeah. if not for the votes of African Americans in Louisiana, we would have had Governor David Duke and U.S. Senator David Duke. That's something that I don't think is often noted, and it should be.
That's absolutely true. And I remember many of the same people who worked to defeat me then came around asking for the black vote to prevent David Duke from, you know, being elected. I mean, it's just ironic the way people think, but I think it's time for black people in the state of Louisiana and Mississippi and elsewhere to step up to the plate and begin to, I mean, vote, because there's still people who didn't vote. I mean, and if they all voted, if they all registered, all voted, they could get people who are more palatable, get people committed to the things that we need to happen in the Congress, because right now it's totally stagnant. Absolutely nothing is happening that's in the good of the people. And, of course, in Louisiana, you have a governor who has prevented people from getting medical care who need it. Black people can do something about it. They're just not voting in large numbers. Yes, they have made some difference, but black people are stronger than their vote indicates.
Why do you think black people are not voting in large numbers?
Well, I think sometimes they think it doesn't matter, because their situation remains the same, because someone is not in office who, after they get elected, do things that are in our best interest. And I am black, for those who are listening and don't know that. So I wanted to disclose that. But I think it's a matter of some people's lives are so negative, so bad, that they don't think anything will make a difference. But we have to constantly preach that lesson that voting does matter. And if enough of you are registered to vote, and I don't mean just black people, but I mean even good people of all races and cultures and nationalities need to come together. I think it shows a need for collaboration sometimes on votes. And, you know, you may not be able to vote the same way on every issue, but there are just some basic issues like the right to vote, making it easier, basic health care, having a job. Those are things that everybody, no matter which state it is, should be together, you know, and vote and decide that, and then hold the people who are accountable, who hold the people accountable that they elect. And when they don't, then elections do come around again, and elections should have consequences. Vote them out of office and try somebody else.
All right. Sometimes small things or seemingly small things end up causing big results. And it was 10 years ago this week that in this great state of Illinois, Republican Jack Ryan withdrew from a U.S. Senate race in which he was favored after revelations of sex club visits in New Orleans with his then wife, actress Jeri Ryan. And this enabled a fellow named Barack Obama to become a U.S. senator and ultimately president of the United States and leader of the free world. Who would have thought, Faye Williams,
so again,
New Orleans would play a role in the election of President Obama?
Yeah, so every vote counts. And a while ago, I was going to make the point that we can't always blame others when we don't get the candidate that we want or that we say we want. Even though I lost in Louisiana by, what, around 5,000 votes, there were 30,000 black people just in Baton Rouge area who didn't go out to vote. So, you know, maybe there would have still been a computer breakdown and some other things would have happened, but I would have been so proud if all those 30,000 people had at least come out and tried to make a difference.
This week, the New York Times released a poll showing that only 40% of all Americans approve of President Obama's performance in office. And if you were to poll only white Americans, I'm sure it's down to about one-third.
Yes.
So what is going on?
Well, you know, Jim, I always say, and many of my black friends say, this is interesting. I've never been polled. Many of them have never been polled. So who is being asked? Because I have to look at the whole picture in terms of what this president goes through to try to make a difference. And when he does, things happen, like the Supreme Court strikes down, you know, his appointments. Now, that will come out okay because the people who are there now are properly appointed and will probably just, you know, affirm the decisions that have been made. But you know, I mean, and everybody knows that many of the things that the Senate was doing was simply to block him from being able to make
those
reforms.
But are you disputing the results of the poll?
I'm sorry?
Are you disputing the results of the poll?
I am saying, yes, I don't know anyone who has been polled. I've never heard, and I see a lot of people in the course of the day, I have never seen a person, a progressive, because that's what most of my friends are,
These pollsters say they can get a representative sample, and this one I'm looking was conducted June 20th through the 22nd with 1,009 adults. Well, that's 1,000 people in a country of over 300 million. But pollsters say you can determine a lot through 1,000 responses.
Pollsters have been wrong a lot of times. Right here in a Virginia race just a few weeks ago when Eric Cantor lost, his polls were showing him up by thousands of votes, several thousand votes. And, of course, he lost pretty badly. So I don't, you know, the evening before my run for Congress in Louisiana, polls had me up by 20, winning by 20 percentage points. But, you know, polls can be wrong. But even if they are right, I can understand some people being upset at this point. But the good part is he's more popular than the United States Congress, you know. So there's just something wrong with our entire system now. It's not just the president. We have to look at the entire blocking of everything that he tries to do. And I think it isn't a fair vote to just say, you know, he's the pollsters may be right now, but I think that's because there's a lot of anger and a lot of disappointment in the country that he hasn't been able to do a lot of things through no fault of his own. So I'm not going to argue maybe that poll is correct, but the point is he's more popular than the rest of the politicians.
And it must, I think, be noted as we let Faye get on her way that pollsters, reputable ones, also predicted that President Obama would win, as he did, by about 5 million votes in 2012 over Mitt Romney, who apparently was under the illusion that the race was going to go to him on election day.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Faye. It's always a pleasure, and we look forward to visiting with you again very soon.
Thank you, Jim, and have a blessed day.
You too. Back with Dan Clater. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and we're joined in studio by State Senator Daniel Albert Clater. Almost got it right. Almost, but he is representing much of Baton Rouge and certainly the area around Louisiana State University. And he is running for Congress in the 6th District, a crowded field of candidates, including former Governor Edwin Washington Edwards. Good morning, Senator Clater.
Good morning, Jim. Great to be here.
Well, nice to talk with you, as always. And much is happening. Let's start front page of the Baton Rouge Advocate today. Bobby Jindal writing a letter saying we ought to put a statue for Pete Maravich outside the Assembly Center, but at the same time not indicating how it would be funded. What do you think of this?
Well, I saw one of the comments elsewhere that he has plenty of money in one of his campaign accounts, so perhaps he'd be nice enough to fund it. I would kick in a little bit for that myself.
Well, if we can, as a state taxpayers, spend $3 million for a library for Governor Foster in Franklin, then maybe we can spend a few million for a statue for Pete Maravich.
Well, and you would think maybe TAF could kick in for it or something else, but, you know, we have bigger issues in whether or not they should be a statue of Pistol Pete out front. He certainly has done an incredible amount for Louisiana and basketball. I loved to watch him play in the old Cow Palace when I was a kid, but we probably have larger issues than whether or not there should be a statue of Pete out front.
I think so. And, of course, since we're talking about Pistol Pete, he is, to this point, not been elected to the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame, despite being the leading scorer in the history of Division I basketball, a record that has stood for 44 years. And the reason is because he did not graduate from college. But we recently, as a LSU group, put in Frank Bryan, who also did not graduate from college. So if an exception is made for Frank Bryan, why isn't an exception made for Pistol Pete?
Good question. And did he not make those numbers not count in his freshman year as well?
What now?
His freshman year is not counted in those numbers,
no,
correct?
No, because in those days, freshmen were not allowed to participate on the varsity. So, yeah, if you add the freshman year, he scored almost 5,000 points at LSU.
That's incredible.
It is incredible. Before the three-point line, and at that time there was no shot clock either. So you had teams like Tennessee who just held the ball to keep him from scoring, and they held him to 20 points. Imagine that.
Imagine
being
that.
Held to 20 points.
Yeah, I remember I would watch those games in the Cow Palace, and they had that removable floor, and Pete would come down the floor and make a little jog at this place or that place, and you thought that was part of his routine, but it was because he knew that was a dead spot in the floor. The opposing team would come down, and the ball would just stick on the floor as they went by, where there were a lot of home field advantage to that court.
There you go. 297-5633, your number for Senator Dan Clater, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. What about Common Core?
There's a lot going on with that, for sure. The governor has made his opposition known here lately and incurred the wrath of various business groups, but it's really not a 30-second conversation to be had. It's much larger and longer than that. They have some very engaged parents. Last year, we had in Senate Education, which I'm a member of, a bill by Senator Crow to address and look at some of these issues. The bill barely made it out of committee when I voted to report it without action, but I voted to report it without action to get it out on the floor so that we could have discussions about data issues, where I was very concerned with how some of that was being played out. And I was also very concerned about textbook choices and making sure that we could put the textbook choices in the hands of the locals and the parents. So we had some bills on that this year.
So did the governor make the right call on this?
I think we need to have a greater discussion on it. There are enough people that are engaged, but I can't tell you that he is making the right call on it. I think that we did some proper things this session as far as making sure that our children's data is not being shared in an improper way. We've safeguarded that. We did some good things about making sure that we're in charge of the textbooks, which is in fact, the curriculum. But as far as the standards, we need some standards. We have had good standards in Louisiana. You see that our ACT scores are improving. When you're talking about the paper this morning, we've made headway on that. So in that we're making headway, do we need Common Core? We got to have more of that discussion as far as I'm concerned.
Well, on another matter, and we're going to cover some ground, and of course, if you'd like to add to the discussion, we welcome that with Senator Claytor, 877-217-5757, wherever you may be. On May 6th, which wasn't that long ago, about a month and a half ago, you were in a committee hearing, and you waved a small drone, said you purchased it for $300 or so at a place called Brookstone.
Out of the mall.
Out of the mall.
Yeah, that wasn't in Baton Rouge at the time.
And your bill failed 7-6 to outlaw these drones in Louisiana. Why do you think they're bad things?
Yeah, Jim, and I know you're trying to abbreviate the conversation a little bit, but it wasn't to outlaw drones. It was to put some restrictions on how they're used. The point of buying the device is that I wanted people in the committee to be able to see what it is. And it's basically a fancy radio-controlled helicopter, or it looks more like a flying saucer. It's equipped with two cameras, very nice, high-definition 720s, one forward-facing and one that looks down below it. And you fly that thing with either your cell phone or you fly it with your iPad or tablet device, or you can get a control panel. But it shows you the video of what the craft is seeing. What my concern was, and still is, that your privacy rights can be terribly violated by both the government with these things and or neighbors or civilians. And so I tried to heighten people's awareness of these issues, and we had a pretty good discussion about it. It came out of the Senate with no big issues, but the House, frankly, killed it because news gathering services were concerned about their limitations to use.
You had the Louisiana Press Association against you, and Sonia Fortdouet, my friend, who's the head of the journalism school at Loyola, she testified saying journalists have to have a way of doing their job, and this is a way to accomplish that goal.
Yeah, and we were trying to make reasonable accommodations on that, but just because you're a journalist, which is a very important thing, we have them on the floor of the Senate, and we have them on the floor of the House right up front so they can see everything. But I don't believe that the press's right trumps my right to privacy. And so we were trying to see if we can get to a reasonable accommodation on that. But one of the members of the House committee was a former reporter herself, and she was able to work to kill the bill.
What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of you looking in my back window, Jim. I'm afraid of somebody else taking pictures of my neighbor's kids in their pool or whatever they're doing in their backyard. I don't mind you taking pictures of what you can ordinarily see, but in this particular instance, technology has outpaced the law. And we have that all the time. It's kind of interesting on the opinion page of the paper we have. A discussion about some Harvard eggheads having questions about innovation, and it's causing disruption, innovation disruption. The car came out and put out the horse buggy. Air travel came out and put out the train. But we still have to have reasonable regulation of these new innovations.
All right, 297-5633 for Senator Dan Claytor. Senator Bodie White, and this is a question from a listener asking about his legislation, and his was different than yours. His would regulate, if I remember correctly, use of drones over critical infrastructure. Now, General Honoré was on this show not so long ago, and he said media need to be looking to make sure chemical companies and the like are doing the right thing.
Well, and there you are on trying to strike the balance, but let's just go to the meat of the coconut. This little drone that I bought for less than $500 has a plug-in feature to where I can put a jump drive essentially into it and tell it where to go, release my ability to control it, and I can send it into actually Alex Box Stadium with whatever I want it to be carrying in there. It's not so much the photographs that we necessarily need to be afraid of in our invasion of privacy, which I do not like, but it's the capability of these things to be used in a, frankly, Terra-type environment. We can poison everybody at Tiger Stadium with one of these if we wish to from quite a distance.
297-5633 is your number. You're going to come back with this legislation, it sounds like.
Well, I am, if I'm still in the legislature. Well, my intention is to be in Congress.
You may be in Congress. So is there some kind of federal attention that is warranted?
Oh, well, actually, the FAA has some rules that they're going to come out with supposedly next year regulating the airspace above 500 feet. And there's obviously a need for that as well, and that you probably remember about 6-7 weeks ago, an airliner in Tallahassee or Tampa was almost taken down by a drone. So it's this isn't science fiction. I'm not making this up. We have instances of collision of these objects with our privacy, with our aircraft, but that doesn't mean that I want to scrap them completely. It's technology moves on.
Right. Now, in the poll that I cited from the New York Times about President Obama's approval rating at only 40%, that same poll and several other questions, and some related to just what we're talking about as far as drones being used for military purposes, 56% of Americans say they favor using unmanned drones to carry out targeted attacks against militants in Iraq. Are you okay with that?
I'm completely okay with that, and that I don't want to see our youngsters, our young men and women, in harm's way when we can take care of the issue with technology.
So you're okay with drones being used to kill enemies abroad, but you're not okay with drones being used to
spy on Americans.
Spy on Americans, but if you're in the public eye, as you are, and I guess as I am, there's a different standard, as we know. If somebody says something about you, the standard is different than if somebody says something about a person out on the street.
Sure, and I've placed myself in that position, and that's okay, but my neighbor, Barbara, nice lady, there's no reason why somebody should be able to take a look at her on her back porch within her fenced-in yard if she hasn't invited them in.
Is that really happening?
Oh, yes. It is definitely happening.
It is?
Oh, yeah. Not to Barbara, but I'm getting comments from people, particularly parents, mm-hmm. that are upset with people it's
what
not
about
the right
a,
phrase,
a,
scoping their
what
children.
What about a wife who suspects her husband is not being faithful? Drones might be helpful in that case.
Sure would be. And if it's her property, she has every right to see what's going on in the house. But if it's elsewhere, that's a question.
A jerk like that should be caught, right? Will in South Baton Rouge. Will, you're on with Senator Claytor.
Good morning, Will.
Will, good morning.
I support the senator in his fear of the use of this technology. The technology is getting smaller and smaller. I've heard that there's drones as small as a hummingbird that could sit right outside your window and look in through the window. So he's right that it's an invasion of our privacy, and it's something that needs to be controlled. Definitely, but I'm also with him on the use of these drones for nefarious purposes like he was mentioning, where it could drop a bomb or spread disease, microbes, or whatever. So right on with that move, Senator. You go for it.
Thank you, Will. The one of the things that came about were when they killed my bill on the House side, I tried to put some amendments on the Senate side to other bills that would look like they would work, and the Stand Your Ground bill came through the House Senate floor, and I put an amendment on it that basically said if a drone comes into your yard, your airspace, that you would be allowed to take it down. So the take out the drone amendment failed, but it made the point that it is something that we need to consider.
why should drones be regulated differently than guns?
Well, there's gun regulation as
there are guns regulations, but you can have a gun.
Sure, and, but you can't shoot it into my yard, Jim. You got to be responsible.
Okay, you got a point there, but you have the capacity to shoot it in the yard if you want to.
Yeah, and you have the capacity to fly it into my yard if you want to, but those are some of the reasons that we have reasonable regulations.
Well, I would much rather have a drone over my backyard than somebody pointing a gun from across the street, and if they just point it and don't use it. And
then it's just called an aggravated assault if they're pointing it at you and they've violated the law. So,
how do I know they're pointing it if they're in their window cowering in the darkness?
Well, then you've never it's never been exposed, and you're all right.
Okay, yeah, unless the person fires it. Brant in East Baton Rouge. Where in East Baton Rouge? Brant, good morning.
Well, it's South Baton Rouge, right near LSU.
Okay.
Good morning, Brant.
Good morning. I don't know if it was okay to change gears, but I wanted to get the senator's opinion as far as, you know, on the national level with the immigration problem that we're getting. On the national level, I wanted to know if there was anything on the state level that Louisiana is doing to try to curb, the youngsters coming across the border.
All right. Is that a big concern in Louisiana?
Well, I mean, it's a concern nationally, and it is a concern in Louisiana. It's not directly on point, but we have E-Verify as it relates to the employment side of things. And so there are some state remedies that we can do, but then we have to be careful about intersecting regulation of interstate commerce and what the federal government can do.
All right. 297-5633 is your number, and we have some Inkster Show at WRKF listeners chiming in as well. Billy Gibson writes, should we regulate the telephoto lens?
Where I'm talking about with this regulation and what he's talking about, the telephoto lens, the argument that he wants to say is, if I put my telephoto camera on a pole and stick it up in the air, what can I see from there as compared to what can I see from flying the drone into your backyard? And we've got a lot of experience with the telephoto lens, and the answer to that is no. But you can go places, and there's no refuting this argument with a drone that you cannot go with the telephoto lens.
All right.
But good question, Billy.
Ross asks, I would like to ask Senator Claytor to consider the difference between a drone and a model airplane. The American, the Academy of Model Aeronautics and the FAA have come to terms to make that distinction, and I hope Senator Claytor will too, writes Ross.
Yes, Ross, you're absolutely correct. Senator Donahue pointed that out in committee and on the floor, and we had some discussion about that. Model airplane is a heck of a lot of fun to fly, but most of them are not equipped with a camera to take photos. What the issue is the invasion of privacy of taking the photos.
Well, Logan says, why would a drone in your backyard filming through a window not be handled the same way as a peeping Tom?
I tried to amend the Peeping Tom statute to allow for that, and I was shot down. It doesn't do that. But you're right on track, young man.
All right. He might not be a young man, but he'll probably take the compliment. We'll be back with Senator Claytor and also hear from Mike Stagg when we return for the next segment after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Senator Daniel Albert Claytor in House, Republican from Baton Rouge by way of Lee High School, where he was part of a team that included Leonard Smith, who just recently was inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame. Did you know that?
I knew that, and I'm mighty proud of Leonard, and of course I'm real proud of Albert as well.
I think Albert Richardson's still the leading tackler in the history of LSU.
Yeah, you go into the LSU locker room, and you go to the All-American wall, and you look at their All-American linebackers, and two of their All-American linebackers are from Lee High School. So,
and you played with Albert, you played with Leonard, you also played with Eugene Daniel, didn't you?
I did, and so everybody ran away from those guys and in my direction, so that was...
Now, how was a modestly built man like you the leading tackler on that Lee High team?
It's said all over those stats. Don't run at Albert, don't run at Leonard. Run at the slow guy on the other side.
I bet you wish there were drones filming those high school exploits of you back in the day.
And they had a nice high perch at the top of Bernie Moore and at the top of Olympia Stadium, where they handled it with their telephoto lens.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on with Senator Claytor.
Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Jim. Yeah, the thing about the cameras on those helicopters or drones is that the technology is wonderful. It's very useful. In fact, the film industry is putting cameras on those and using them in photography, and it's incredible some of the stuff that you can do with them. But I think it comes down to the technology, whatever it that is it still our Bill of Rights need to be protected? You know, whatever's out there. You got Facebook going on. You got the searching the cell phone just came through the Supreme Court. So I think you're on the right track. That's part of what government is for, is to, you know, protect our rights.
Well, thank you. Always nice to know I'm on the right track.
Well, it is a dividing line. You got to make a call somewhere. And as Americans, I think we want to know what our government is doing. And we want to know whether it's acting in the best interests of the people. And sometimes the government puts up roadblocks.
They do. And a lot of times it seems as though our amendments are colliding with one another. And we got to be as smart as we can about it. But ultimately, it ends up in court.
And the Jindal administration and the Obama administration, one thing they have in common is that they have both put up a lot of roadblocks to public scrutiny of what they're doing.
I'm not for that.
Well, they have done it, both of them, from the left and the right.
All right. Well, you
pox on both their houses, Senator Claytor.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've done a lot as far as trying to bring transparency in the various processes where, for example, the LSU Board of Supervisors awards those 20 scholarships, and that was happening in the dark, and I wanted to make sure that folks knew what happened there and that they disclosed who they awarded them to, as well as the Southern Board, and they started disclosing it, and lo and behold, the auditor has found a couple of problems. And we're going to improve that system. I wanted to do the same thing with the Tulane scholarships as far as taking that out of the hands of the legislators and making sure that it wasn't an insider game.
A few more minutes, some listeners have asked some good questions. Here's one. Who are you supporting in the U.S. Senate race?
I'm waiting for that to shake out. But
will it be Senator Landrieu?
No. I expect I'm with Cassidy. I think he's doing a great job and ought to be there, but I am not supporting Senator Landrieu.
All right. Well, I got an email from Rob Manus saying he's embarking on a 50-city town hall series. He's bragging about raising $1 million. He is not going down without a fight.
No, I get that. And Jim, we all win when we have a good discussion on these things. We're not a single-party country. We need to have two parties so that we can have these discussions and see where we are.
And Rob Manus, by the way, has accepted an invitation to appear before the Baton Rouge Press Club, as Senator Landrieu did. Congressman Cassidy, to this point, has declined.
I expect he'll be happy to do it at some point.
Last time he was there, he said we need to get rid of public broadcasting, at least funding for public. He didn't say we need to get rid of public, but government funding for public broadcasting. He said Big Bird will lose his funding.
I'm not for getting rid of Big Bird. I don't want him to fly the coop.
Okay. Another question quickly. Higher education cut 67% by the Jindal administration.
I'm embarrassed by that. I've worked hard. I am consider myself the senator for LSU along with Yvonne Dorsey, and I have worked hard to maintain funding not only for LSU but for higher ed.
Okay.
Sometimes I'm the lone voice out there.
And as a setup for our next guest, Mike Stagg, were you supportive of the bill to shut down the suit against the oil and gas industry?
Yeah. Now, it's not quite as simple as that. It took us a whole session to have the discussion, but the short version is I did not support the levy board as being the plaintiff in those lawsuits. I do believe that the parishes have every right to bring those lawsuits.
Why wouldn't the levy board have standing?
I just don't believe that they're the proper party plaintiff to represent the parishes, to represent the individuals, to represent the other impacted parties.
Isn't that who they represent?
No. They just represent the levy board. And
they're just representing themselves, you're saying.
That's who the power that they have to represent. And we have real differences of opinion on that.
Well, that would be like saying you're just representing yourself.
No, that's not.
What's the difference?
I represent the entire district.
Okay. 297-5633, Jim and Gonzalez. Jim, good morning. You're on with Senator Claytor.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. I have one of the thousands of topics we can talk about.
Well, be brief, please.
Okay. The only thing that's going to save our country is to put our people back to work, and the only thing that will do that is to preclude globalists who hire offshore, preclude them from our markets.
We've had embargoes before, and we have to be careful about how we do that. But I like to incentivize work. I like to stay out of the business of small business. I do believe that big government has forgotten small business. But I don't believe it is quite as simple as just saying we're going to put a worldwide embargo.
Okay. But to follow your logic on the levy board lawsuit, if John Berry as an individual had filed suit, would you be okay with that?
I would not take John Berry's right to a lawsuit away, and we didn't do that. No individual lost their right to a lawsuit. No parish lost their right to a lawsuit.
Okay. Well, it's an issue that we're about to talk about with Mike Stagg, and I think he has a different point of view.
And I expect he does. And we've had good discussions on this, and reasonable people can disagree.
Well, Jim Brown was on our program a few days ago. You might have been listening. He said he thought this would be the biggest issue in the congressional race, in which there very well could be a runoff between you and a guy named Edwards.
There very well could be. And I was very impressed to hear that Jim ran with Bob Hayes. I had somehow missed that completely. So he's a speedster.
They at one point, I think, had the world record for a four-person relay team, Bob Hayes, Jim Brown, Paul Warfield, and Ralph Boston. What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah, very interesting. And old Coach Morrow was a heck of a hurdler where he was in the Olympics in Munich, if I remember correctly.
Well, Jim Brown is one of those athletes who I don't think he's a real big sports fan, but some of the names he throws around, I don't think he realizes. Paul Warfield, I believe, is a Pro Football Hall of Famer. Bob Hayes was a Pro Football Hall of Famer, and Ralph Boston held the broad jump record for many, many years, and then there's Jim Brown.
That's great.
But thank you, Dan Claytor, who was the leading tackler on the Lehigh team, 1978?
Yep, class of 79.
And it included now College Football Hall of Famer Leonard Smith, all-time LSU tackler Albert Richardson. Was Eugene Daniel gone by then?
No, he was there too.
He was there too. My goodness.
Wow. We had Mike Delicano at quarterback.
Well, why didn't you win the state title?
We fell apart on the road, Jim.
Okay. Who'd you lose to?
Woodlawn and Shreveport. Terry Ferguson and all those guys. They weren't playing. They had moved on, but that's who we lost to.
Okay. Mike Stagg in studio, longtime Louisiana activist, and he's about to get on the road.
We've been on the road.
Well, you're going to get on the road some more.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell us what's going to happen with this march on the Capitol.
Well, we started last Saturday in Grand Isle, 2 o'clock in Grand Isle. We had a group of people. We're marching really over the bill we were talking about earlier, SB 469, now Act 544, that exempts the oil and gas industry from their liability for damages to Louisiana's coastal wetlands. And I guess the main area of concern was that shortly after the bill passed, there was a legal memorandum published by a law professor at Loyola University in New Orleans that was later signed by, I think, 103 or 104 other law professors, saying that the bill was so broadly written and so hastily drawn that it jeopardized the state's ability to collect on the BP damages, our share of the fines that BP will pay for environmental damage. The attorney general asked the governor not to sign it. We figured, okay, here's a chance to maybe get out and Not that anybody can actually put any pressure on the governor, since he doesn't really care too much about Louisiana. We're kind of just an afterthought. But he would turn around and sign the bill. We decided to do it anyway. We've been marching since last Saturday in Grand Isle. We're going to cross the river today in Plaquemines on the ferry, be on the east side of the river this evening, and march at the governor's mansion tomorrow morning.
All right, 297-5633, if you'd like to join us in our remaining time with Mike Stagg, a longtime activist, and he is part of this march. In fact, the ringleader for the march It's not on the Capitol. It's on the mansion.
On the mansion.
Now,
right.
In the old days, before Governor Foster, there was no fence around the mansion. There is now. I imagine the fence will be closed come tomorrow. But how many people will be at the doorstep of the governor when you arrive?
We're not going to the doorstep. We're doing that lot across the street. We're not trying to, you know, cause a ruckus.
That's
in
close
the
enough.
Itself.
If you got a drone, you could certainly.
Right. If we had one, yeah. But what we're doing, we're asking people from across the state to bring water from their communities. We've been carrying water from Grand Isle. We carried a little over 3 gallons of water from the Gulf of Mexico up with us, and we're asking people from other parts of the state to bring their troubled waters. People from St. Tammany, Orleans, Lake Pinure, Bayou Corn, Mossville, other places where we have water under duress.
The governor says his legal team has said that there's no problem with this killing of the lawsuit, that it won't affect any litigation and any damages from BP.
Right.
Now, there are other legal eagles on the other side who say that the governor is wrong. What's your take on it?
Well, I'll just point out that the governor's, I think, 0-5 at Louisiana Supreme Court on his things like so-called education reforms and other issues, retirement plans, changes. So I don't put a lot of stock in the value of his legal counsel's opinion. But I'm not an attorney, but when you preponderance of evidence from 103 other legal scholars and the attorney general, say there's a problem with that bill, I'd say, well, you should at least pause. Instead, he just turned around and signed it.
Well, you're not only complaining about Senate Bill 469, but you also have some questions about the stewardship over the state's water resources. Why?
Well, you know, if you look just across the border into Texas and over in California, we have serious droughts, multi-year droughts that have really depleted water supplies there. And they're, you know, we on the other hand have a lot of water, but we treat it like it's inexhaustible supply. And what I believe has happened, and what's become clear over this working with the Green Army over the past 9 months or so, is that we have made a series of compromises on the environment that, when you look at them just discreetly, might be okay. But when you start to look at the cumulative effect of all these decisions that have been made, mm-hmm. that begins to impose a toll that we haven't really recognized. To carve a single salt dome storage cavern takes 3 billion gallons of aquifer water that would otherwise be used for drinking.
All right, Darrell writes, with respect to whether the levee boards have standing, Mr. Clater should know that the courts have always had the authority and have a lot of experience to determine whether a specific plaintiff has proper standing to file a lawsuit. That power should not have been taken away from the courts. I'm sure you would agree with that.
I would agree. I would also point out that the oil and gas industry apparently agrees with it too, because if there was a dispute over the facts, there wouldn't have been an attempt to kill the lawsuits. The problem is there's no dispute over the facts. You go back to when Edwin Evers was governor in the 70s, we had the first use tax. That was about trying to make the rest of the country pay for the price that the cost that we were bearing for damage to our wetlands for energy exploration. And then Dave Treen's mm-hmm. Coastal Wetlands Environmental Levy. It's long been recognized that we pay a price on the coast for energy production.
So what happens tomorrow if somebody wants to jump in and get on the last leg of the march to the mansion?
Well, if about 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, we should be at the flag pedestal at the intersection of Skip Burtman Drive and River Road. And we'll walk in the last four miles or so from there.
What time to get started?
Well, tomorrow we'll probably start about 8 o'clock. We'll be a little bit south of there, cover a little ground before we get there. And, you know, we're going to meet across the street from the mansion at noon, and we're asking people to bring their water, tell the story about their water, and then we want to ceremonially dump it on the grounds in front of the governor's mansion.
All right. Well, do you know if the governor will be home?
Oh, he'll never be home. It's a weekend. He's out campaigning somewhere.
Well, do you think you'll make an impression if he's not at home?
Well, you know, I don't think there's anything about Louisiana that's going to make an impression on him. I think this is public consumption.
I think he is governor of Louisiana. He may not acknowledge it, but his family may be there. What about Sapria and the kids?
I don't know. I think
you may disrupt their Saturday.
we're not going inside the fence.
No, but they may be watching.
They might. It'd be entertaining.
Where do you think this is going, this issue?
Well, I think it's not going away. I think that what we're going to see, and we have the Green Army has a strategic planning meeting coming up in a couple of weeks, and I think we're not going away because the session's over, and we're going to come back next year with more bills and more votes and get legislators on the record on issues that matter to people.
Well, we thank you for joining us today, Mike Stagg, and you've been involved in this issue for some time.
Thank you so much for having me on.
What was the catalyst for the march?
Well, the catalyst for the march was 469 and the attempt to make the connection. You know, in southeast Louisiana, coastal restoration is not a theoretical question. And we walked along LA-1 between Leeville and Golden Meadow. That is the only land there, the road, and there's LA-1, there's water, and then there's Bayou Lafourche. You know,
so
it's just a sliver.
Well, nice to join you. Nice for you to join us, and we'll be back Monday. Until then, for Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Engster. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.